Welcome to the Tipsy Archives, the podcast where we drink too much wine and gossip about the past and the arts. In this episode, I was joined by Laura Whitehouse, who is working on her PhD in archaeology with a specialization in Anglo-Saxon cemeteries and deviant burial. I had a lovely time talking with Laura about decapitations, exhumations, Vikings, vampires, and strange burial customs. So pour yourself a glass of wine, and I hope you enjoy. Okay, Laura, welcome to my house.
Hey.
And my podcast. We met, I think, a number of months ago now.
Yeah,
we did. And basically, as soon as you told me what you were studying your PhD in, I insisted that you had to come on the podcast and talk about it with me, because it's very unique. So why don't you tell me what you're not quite there. You're super, super close.
Yep.
You were almost Dr. Laura Whitehouse.
I am.
In what?
Well, it's technically archaeology, but here it would probably be referred to as anthropology, because my basis was originally in osteology. So I focused on burial and namely skeletal remains. So it's kind of, it changes depending on who you talk to, but mm-hmm. on the paper it'll be PhD archaeology.
Mm-hmm.
With a specialism in Anglo-Saxon burial. So it started because I had a focus on my undergrad of forensics, and that led into an interest in burial. And I started talking to some of my lecturers, and I needed a data set that I could work with, namely cemetery records.
So forensics would have been a science degree.
It would, but it was under a BA archaeology.
Oh,
because
okay.
For a lot of UK institutions, archaeology is a BA, even though a good 70% of my degree was what you would term scientific. So
right, because of course archaeology is just a branch of anthropology.
Yes.
Or at least that's how I've been taught here.
Yeah, so the perspectives are completely different. So we keep archaeology completely separate to anthropology in the UK. Whereas here,
it makes sense because it's very scientific, especially when you get into forensics. I mean, that very, very scientific.
Definitely. So I did a lot of osteology, and then I did a focus on decomposition, and that led to forensics and kind of crime scene investigation from an archaeological point of view. So elements of burial and the way that you can infer information about the deceased from the mode of burial and what is left.
So how did you get onto specifically, because you say Anglo-Saxon, we're talking mm-hmm. 5th to 11th century roughly?
I only do early, so I focus 5th to the 8th.
So how did you get from, forensic studies to Anglo-Saxon forensic studies?
Well, I also did a gender archaeology course, and it kind of merged alongside this burial. And when I started looking into engendered burial, there was a very large quantity of evidence for things like weapon burial with males and jewellery burial with females. And it was very stereotypical.
So I have a confession to make. I Googled your name, of course.
Okay.
I do. With, cemeteries or archaeology or something, and I found a previous paper that you had written.
Okay.
That came up from, I think, when you were in Birmingham?
Yes.
And that was more about engendered burials, okay. And I just kind of glanced over it. It wasn't very long, I think, but you did talk about females being buried with weapons. And
yes.
Yeah.
So that was what... That was spurred by my undergraduate dissertation.
Hmm.
Because that was on Anglo-Saxon cemeteries, the same as my PhD, but it was a focus on females buried with weapons.
Hmm.
And I focused on Anglo-Saxon Kent for that, and it's very rich records from there. The very good preservation, very wealthy burials. And there was, from my data there, we came up with a massive proportion of skeletally identified females that had grave goods that were classified as weapons. Even though in some of the cemetery reports that I was coming across, when you go to the original, almost like the analysis that they come out with, you will find that they've been classified as male.
Because they just make the assumption based on how they've been buried.
Yeah. If they see any kind of weapon, apart from a knife, which is standard for Anglo-Saxon archaeology.
So why, in that instance, were there so many women buried with weapons?
I think it has a lot to do with local tradition and that region, because you have a very high influx of grave goods coming across from a number of different regions.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a big Scandinavian influence as well. And there's also an element of the weapon having almost like an identity that you get from Viking Age archaeology, mm-hmm. where you can pass on the almost like the honour and the identity of that weapon by placing it in a grave.
Right.
So there's less, because you've got more of those grave goods populating throughout, you can also afford to put more within the grave. Because when you move to areas like more north, so East Anglia and higher, like York, you find that you get less grave goods, quantity and quality, because there's less to go around.
Now, this is kind of a total sidebar, but just talking about Viking burials, of like ship burials.
Yeah.
That's not super common in the UK, I think, that they've found
there's
much of that.
A few. But
I mean,
not.
Obviously, I know about like Sutton Hoo, but that's more southeast.
Sutton Hoo is in my region for my PhD, so it's East Anglia.
Okay.
So you get them there, because in one of my cemeteries is Snape. And there is a ship burial there, but it's very, very rare.
And with the ship burials, that's quite common that they are buried with a lot of things.
Yes. Yeah. So you'd get normally a ship burial of what we would deem as the leader or the king, I'm reluctant to say.
Chieftain,
yeah. The military leader, usually, because then there'd be a whole group of weapons. And then they'd also sometimes be buried with what we would think to be their allies, their underlings.
So would that have happened if they were, say, if they were in a battle and they had happened to all die together?
That's one of the hypotheses, yeah.
I mean, because I know if you look at, say, Egyptian burial, often if an important person dies, their servants will be killed to be buried with them.
Yeah.
That's probably not what happened there. Maybe, who knows?
It's possible. It kind of depends on the ego of the leader.
Yes,
but
that's
true. Would... Normally, in those instances, if you find trauma on the bone, it's not indicative of sacrifice, usually. And sacrifice is coming in a whole separate section of burial. These men, usually men, there are some women in some instances, but they're usually men. They're buried with high status goods and buried with, in almost a respectful way, but with a main focus on that individual in the centre.
Yeah.
To almost promote how respected he was.
So you did your undergrad in England.
Yes.
When did you come over to Canada?
2 years ago.
And that was that for your PhD?
No, that was because my partner
got
a postdoctoral position at SFU.
Right.
So I came across because at that point I was writing up, so I could pretty much write wherever I was.
Of course.
And it was easier to come and be somewhere with good access to books, good access to the resources I could still use here.
So, I mean, I've been to the UK, not all over, but I've been to London, Edinburgh, and as well as I've also been to Ireland. And for me, the cemeteries over there are so much better. And I'm sure you've seen a few over here.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we have the one right there, which, you know, you came over to my house today, and I live right near the largest and I think only cemetery in Vancouver, which to me is beautiful. And like one of the reasons that I was interested in when you told me what you did is because I absolutely love cemeteries and really like death rites in general. I think are absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've just always thought that they were very calming and peaceful, respectful, beautiful. But I've also seen a lot of cemeteries here that are new and boring and concrete and gray and just not very pretty.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, the ones you get over there, especially, like, a city like Edinburgh, like, there's just beautiful cemeteries everywhere.
Mm. Yeah, I think that does, unfortunately, come with...
I mean, you guys have, you know, centuries on your side.
That's...
Millennia.
That's where it comes from.
Yeah.
Yeah. It would be a... maintaining that kind of essence of the past, which is more difficult here.
Mm-hmm.
But some people also like this very clean, very like st- stagnant approach to death. They want to keep it as minimal as possible because they don't want it, like, in their face. They don't want these ostentatious cemeteries that show it as a almost like a beautiful environment. They don't want that. They want it clean.
Well, and also here, they are encouraging people or making them possibly do the flat plaques because it's easier to mow the grass.
Oh, yeah. That sounds about right.
Yeah. And so you don't see as many of the big, ornate, you know, angel statues. Angels, yeah. And, yeah, my sister and I actually just did a little photo shoot in the cemetery on Sunday.
Sorry, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm excited to see the results of that. I got put on my spooky cape.
I do find that the whole concept is just, it baffles me. Because, like, if you think about it, if, God forbid, it should happen where you are confronted with a dead body,
mm-hmm.
and it's a loved one, or it's someone that you know. Like, just, even though nowadays you have people that have wills that specify exactly what they want after they're dead, I just think, okay, the practical side of me says, right, you're going to have to get rid of it, because, mm-hmm. in essence, it's a dead entity.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to have natural processes that occur to it that make it unpleasant to be around.
Yeah.
So you burn it or you bury it. You get it away from the living humans. But then I think, because I've been to a few funerals recently,
mm-hmm.
and they were the strangest events that I've ever encountered. Because from the research as well, not to sound like a complete, like, nerd, but I did
nerd,
death.
Nerdism is really encouraged here, so nerd out.
But doing death every day for so long,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm probably 10 years of doing death every day.
Yeah.
And then you encounter it with a family member.
Mm-hmm.
And you just think, this is really strange. So they've died and they've taken them from the hospital or wherever and they've gone to the morgue. And they've stayed there for however long till it was a convenient date to have the funeral for everyone that could make it.
Mm-hmm.
So they've pretty much been put on ice after they've
embalmed or whatever.
And then all of those processes have happened to delay the decomposition. Then they're going to put them in a really shiny box.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to have it almost paraded in, wheeled in front of everyone and placed in front of this crowd,
mm-hmm.
and then everybody's going to tell really sad stories and everybody's going to cry and it's a really horrible environment,
mm-hmm.
and then we're going to pay an extortionate amount of money for
so much money,
flowers and all of that kerfuffle that, mm-hmm. comes with it, and then we're going to either burn them or put them in the ground, and then we're going to visit that place whenever we feel like it on anniversaries, whatever, and place more flowers there. And I just think that is so strange.
Do you think it's weirder to you now because of what you've been studying for the last few years? Or do you think it was always kind of a weird thing to you?
I think it was always weird.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, I love cultures so that now. Celebrate. Like, that's, you know,
yeah.
like, you hear
I
the Irish
that a
wake
lot more.
Or whatever. Like, let's party. Let's remember. Of course it's sad. But, like,
yeah.
let's dance and laugh and...
Yeah. And have the happy memories, mm-hmm. not the... Just all I can kind of see it as is a thick veil of misery,
mm-hmm.
and I don't get it. Like I don't get the processes either. Like
one thing that I think is really interesting, and like this is, there's so many other things I want to ask you about your studies. Victorian mourning culture is something to me that I think is really fascinating, and I think that that's where a lot of our traditions come from now.
Definitely does,
with
yeah.
the blackness and the veil,
yeah.
and the sadness,
the
and
depression,
the depression, and
the embracing grief to the
even,
point of ridiculous.
Even they were like more like weirdly morbid in the way that they would just like hang out with the dead body, and there it was
yeah.
there was more acceptance of what was happening, I think, and but like
yeah.
they added sort of this level of like beautiful moody drama to it.
True, yeah.
But that I think is I think the Victorians were just very dramatic people.
I agree.
In a very like polite way.
Yeah. Yeah. In a very reserved, very kind of like
yeah.
tight way. Yeah.
But I think we've held on to that sort of like very like sort of somber attitude, without the fantastic mourning attire.
Yes, definitely.
But it's, yeah, it's super interesting when you look at the way that other cultures deal with their dead or deal with their grief.
Definitely.
And even, like, looking at, what your research is in for your thesis. Mm-hmm. And so you talk about deviant burial.
I do.
And so looking over some of your notes and other things I was reading, I mean, one thing that came across to me is that you really have to take into account what is specifically going on with that community,
yes.
that culture, that society, especially when you're considering what's deviant compared yes. to what that society is saying is normal. But even within one country, like mm-hmm. England, each community is going to do something that's a little bit more specific to them, perhaps.
Definitely.
Or even within, like, different families having different traditions.
Yeah.
So, I mean, everybody deals with things, you know, in such a different way.
I think the main thing that struck me when I started researching is the big sweeping statements that you get that classify Anglo-Saxons, for a start, just mm-hmm. the whole group,
right.
Anglo-Saxons as a group,
yeah.
their burial rites are this, 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 and this. And
well, and you look at Anglo-Saxon as a time period in a place. I mean, you have, of course, Anglo-Saxons, meaning Germanic people coming over, mm-hmm. but there's also, like, a ton of Vikings. There's all kinds of different people.
Yeah.
It's not just one
nope.
type of person or one group of people or even one specific religion or
no nope. and yeah. we have very little to go on in terms of religion anyway, so mm-hmm. trying to and most of the time death is associated with religion, so you have this gap, you have this real like cavity where you try and assign some reason to whatever practice is happening, and most of the time we just go ritual, and that's the word that they use all mm-hmm. the time, and it really winds me up. Because there's no, it's an empty word, there's nothing to it. Because a lot of the burials that I've dealt with, and a lot of them that I've come to know very well, and they get so stereotyped mm-hmm. and so pigeonholed that you lose that familiarity. These were people, we mm-hmm. are people. Mm-hmm. Like, regardless of the social, the cultural environment, there's still an essence of when you, for instance, when you lose a child, the emotion is going to be very similar.
Mm-hmm.
To think that it's lessened because it's in a particular time, and yes, more children will have died prematurely and more children would have died from illness and sickness, but you're still dealing with the death of a child. So mm-hmm. when they place them within these graves and there's very specific rituals done, and these rituals may have no like corresponding right anywhere else, is valuable because it is. Mm-hmm. Because it's an individualized thing. It doesn't need to be matched up with another burial from the same time period to make it, to give it validation.
Mm-hmm.
Like, these were individuals.
So I want to get into your research on deviant burial and the whole sort of database that you are talking about.
Mm-hmm.
But first, I just want to comment on that by saying yesterday I had a lecture in anthropology. We were learning about Inuit people.
Yeah.
And how the British explorers came over and they viewed these people as being so cold and so, like, cold because they're in the north.
Cold.
But, you know, like, without emotion and warmth and politeness and just something really brutal about them. Whereas, like, somebody would die and they would just leave them behind and there wouldn't be a lot of talk about it. But it wasn't because they didn't care. And it wasn't because they didn't love their families. It's because they live in such a harsh environment where it's life and death and starvation all the time, that they just deal with things very quickly.
Exactly.
And they're just, you know, somebody said, like, well, you know, like, grandpa is not going to make another day. Here's a piece of meat. You're probably going to die overnight. We love you. Okay, bye. Like, and then they're gone because they got to go. They're hunting seals or whatever.
Yeah.
And people look at that and they go, like, that's so harsh. How could they do that? Like, no, that's their reality. That's their culture. Yeah. That's what they have to do.
Yep.
So it's not that they don't feel the same way. It's that they're just living the way they have to live in their culture
exactly.
to survive and to go on.
Yeah.
So,
because people don't tend to understand that your social conditioning is what gives you these
mm-hmm.
preconceived models.
Well, what are they going to do? Bury them in ice and have a funeral
exactly.
for them? Like, no, they know some polar bear is going to come along and eat that old dude, and then it's going to nourish that polar bear family,
exactly
which
like
they are
that.
Later going to come back and hunt, and then it's all just going to give back to them.
Yeah.
So it's perfectly acceptable to just leave a dead person on the ice because
yeah.
now they're food for, you know, who yeah. knows? That just reminded me what you're saying
yeah.
About that lecture yesterday.
In terms of the deviance, and I really, sometimes I regret using the word because there is a massive connotation with it.
Of course. As soon as you say deviant burial, people think, oh, this is all the bad people.
Yep. This is all the, like, subculture.
This is immediately criminal. What I thought when we talked about it.
Yeah. And there is, like, yes, there are some heinously treated individuals that are in my database and across the world and across time periods.
So there are criminals.
Yep.
There are people suspected of witchcraft.
There are. They're normally termed cunning women for Anglo-Saxon period. So they're associated
with... cunning women?
Cunning. It's my accent.
Cunning.
Yeah. So almost like suspicious and spiritual women that were... And men to an extent. Men more so in the Viking period. But you would have... very strange objects associated with them. Amulets and anything with amuletic kind of properties. But you'd also get very strange things like bird bones in boxes. And I've got one particular female with... She's got bird bones, which I'm assuming were in a little bag suspended from her waist. And they were on her hip. And she's buried like that. And she's got a shell in her hands. Like... tightly in her fist.
I'm kind of laughing because I have bird bones and shells in my room right now. I'm like, okay.
So there you go.
I'm pretty suspicious.
It's not so strange.
Crystals and all kinds
of things. Yep, you'd get crystals as well and the fossils and things are very rare for that time period, but you find them normally with females.
So you talk about, the term deviant more having to do with somebody whose burial is atypical to the other people around them in their particular community or culture.
Yeah.
So it's not necessarily like, you know, this person was terrible. You're just looking at it and saying this burial is different.
Yes, that's exactly right. Mm-hmm. Saying that this is deviant from the norm.
Mm-hmm.
And I think by the end of the study, I got to a point where I kind of began to see it as an eccentricity rather than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
Because some of them are very strange, but they're not necessarily because, you know, these people were hated or these people were punished. For instance, my favourite one, and I shouldn't have favourites, but...
No, I want to hear about your favourite. I was going to ask you.
My favourite one is a young boy, and he's about 8. And he's buried in quite a wide grave and quite a long grave for him. And he's lying back to back with... a large dog, and the dog is pretty much there in symmetry, and the dog is lying just right by him. And every time I see the grave plan, I just think, you shouldn't think, oh, that's so sweet. But because it very may be that the child died and then he was very close to the dog and they killed the dog to be buried with the child, or maybe they both died in the same instance. But I just always look at it and think, that is classified as deviant because it has an animal burial within it. And there are some, there's some burials with cremated animals and some with complete animal skeletons, but to be buried with a dog was very strange in mine. And it was just, it completely embodied what I was looking for. It was completely, that was my conclusion right there, was yes, he's strange and yes, this is unusual and I've never seen another one like it. But he's not deviant.
Yeah.
He's not... It's not disrespectful, and he's not being punished from what I can see, but it still gets termed as deviant.
Yeah, so a deviant burial is not really necessarily at all about alienation from the group.
Not necessarily, but in some instances it is.
In some it is. I mean, my mind automatically went to, of course, like, I guess I'm just trying to think, like, early Anglo-Saxon. I mean, Christianity is happening, and it's
there's some influences have coming through, but in a lot of the burials that I'm looking at, I wouldn't say they're from Christian communities.
Right.
But you can tell that the instances are kind of starting coming through. We've got cruciform brooches and things like that that give you an instinct of it, but not full-blown Christianity.
Right. So in a previous episode I recorded with my cousin, I don't know if you had heard it, we talked about she'd gone to Oxford. And we were talking about an excavation at the Littlemore Priory near Oxford. I don't know if you've heard of it. But they sort of found this priory that had been... It was shut down due to misbehaving nuns.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Which is why we were talking about it. But they had, now I'm not sure if maybe they had kind of forgotten there was a priory there for a while or if they knew, but at the time it was kind of just a building that was either a tavern or an inn or some storage or something. But like the cemetery had been kind of forgotten, and eventually the town, and it was a very sort of neighborhood project actually that like Oxford and a group involved with them were involved with getting going, but the town really kind of pitched in and was involved and did a lot of volunteering to excavate this area, and they dug up the cemetery, and they did find a few kind of really different types of burials. One was a woman who was buried with a baby, but the baby was added later.
Yes.
Like, I don't know how much later, but enough that they thought it probably wasn't her baby.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So that was kind of interesting. And then, of course, there was a woman who was buried face down.
Oh, yes.
So, I mean, and their theory was that you know, she'd done something bad or was suspected of witchcraft or, like, something that they, in a religious sense. And because it was a priory, I mean, this was, I want to say, like, 10th or 11th century.
Okay.
Like, it was quite, well, that's when the priory was established. It wasn't shut down until the 16th.
Okay.
So, I mean, definitely very Christian.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it reminded me of that case too. And of course, they don't specifically know who it is or why.
No.
But that's one thing that comes up when you.
I think prone burial is one of the most obvious.
Mm-hmm.
When people look at it, regardless of education or any kind of background, if you look at a burial that's buried face down, and you just automatically think that can't be good.
Yeah,
it's just instinctual. And I didn't realize until
like
I started
this
research.
There were misbehaving nuns,
well, so. Yep, that's true. But it's such an old rite. I think the first prone burial that we found so far is 26,000 years old.
Oh, wow.
And that was from the Czech Republic. And since then, there has been, up until, I think, Flanders and the World War, like, you've still got prone burials, and it is usually heavily associated with disrespect, obviously. But then there's instances where it's coming through as not. I think Egyptian, I think it was the third dynasty, and you've got a pharaoh that wanted all of those buried in the same vicinity as him to be buried face down so he could be seen as watching over them. He was watching them, even though they're buried face down. But then you also have this element of being face down because people worry that the soul's going to escape or they're going to come back. There is a heavy religious, like, symbolism associated with prone burial. And straight away, I mean, you've got a lot in Anglo-Saxon. I've got 10, I think, prone burial in my database, and they're all very suspicious. They are strange. There's one that's buried and she's got her arm twisted around her back, and her feet are together as almost like she's been held in restraints.
Right.
And been thrown in or placed in face down.
Yikes.
Yeah. And then some of the prone burials have also got huge stones placed on top of them. And you just think, I really hope they were dead when they did that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or at least unconscious. Because that must be horrific if that did happen. And it, some of them look like buried alive may have been one hypothesis.
Did they, at that period of time, tend to use coffins at all, or were they just...
There are some coffin burials.
Yeah.
We don't get many of the remains up. There's some, I think there's one wooden, I think we've got one remains of one wooden, and then there's some that are believed to have been coffin burials because of the shape and the remnants left in the grave.
The one of the graves at Littlemore was like a limestone.
Oh, right.
Coffin. So it was really just embedded right into the ground with limestones all around. I think it was the prioress.
Oh, okay.
Her body. So that was interesting because it wasn't like a coffin you could put her in and lower her down into or anything. It was just actually like kind of built right under the ground and then covered in dirt.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a few actually in I think it's the Spong Hill, and I've got some that have got like almost a perimeter of flints, big flint stones, and they've placed them within them. And they're thinking maybe it's a local rite where you've got this outline of the grave in flints, and then you've got one big flint at the top of where the head is to show as a grave marker.
It makes it easier for people exhuming them.
Yeah, well, yeah, definitely. They're obviously thinking about me.
Yeah,
for the future,
obviously. So, have you been on digs yourself?
I have. It was mandatory in our undergrad. We did several digs for first, second, and third years. I did a supervisory position at my third year. None of them were graves, unfortunately. They were more of your standard wall, ditch. All those reasons why you get really unhappy undergrads in archaeology. But then I did do some commercial archaeology for a while after I graduated my undergrad. But none of them were graves. I may have seemed to have missed my chance to dig for the graves. But my partner's done quite a lot.
Have you had the chance to inspect a lot of the remains, or many of them at all?
Yeah, I did an osteological course where I haven't dealt with my remains, because a lot of them are either in a box somewhere, mm-hmm. or in British Museum, or some of them are lost. I tried to inquire mm-hmm. about some, because I was interested in looking at the pathological information from some of them.
But is there just written records, photographs, drawings?
Yes, all of that exists. Yeah. There's the original records, and there's cemetery reports, there's photographs, there's diagrams. But getting your hands on the original records and the original remains is very difficult. Very, very difficult. There's some of them that were recently mm-hmm. excavated, but those are normally been taken straight to either universities or museums. So the ones that were really interesting, for instance, what I was talking about earlier with the female individuals with weapons, where you could actually look at those skulls or pelvises and then think, actually justify that these are females buried with weapons, mm-hmm. are lost.
Lost in somewhere.
I spoke to quite a few people, and they each told me different stories about where some of them were. And I think that is the main problem with Anglo-Saxon cemeteries. Some of the times you get so many, and mm-hmm. it's done on such a strict time frame and a strict budget that, you know, if this was the 80s, for instance, a lot of my cemetery reports are the 80s, that there's no way that you can keep track.
Right, because they're not computerized.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So they'll be stored somewhere, mm-hmm. and somebody will happen across them at some point. But
that's actually something that I'm considering pointing my master's towards, is digital archives.
Yeah.
And just, taking information that exists and, you know.
It would be absolutely fantastic mm-hmm. to be able to go and know exactly where the remains are that you're studying right now would be, well, they'd have made my life a hell of a lot easier.
So how do you feel about, these people, we're learning so much about excavations, like people's culture through excavating their graves, which is obviously extremely valuable and revealing. But how do you feel about the fact that we are digging them up? Especially when there is obviously a lot of sort of ritual or superstition or religion about how they've been put to rest. Mm-hmm. I'm a spiritual person. I'm a little superstitious. I don't necessarily feel like digging somebody up is pulling them out of their afterlife or anything. But, right. Do you have any thoughts on that?
To be honest, although completely against my research and my academic career, I really don't think we should be. I don't think it is vital for us to know anything about so far in the past. I don't think, unless it's a recovery excavation, or unless, as the mainly a lot of my cemetery reports were, because somebody's putting a road through or somebody's putting a shopping mall up.
Right, which happens a lot.
That is mainly it is rescue excavation, so we need to get those, whatever is buried.
This is why it's taken Rome over a decade to build a new subway tunnel.
Yep. And part of me says, do you really need a subway tunnel? Can't we just leave it the way it is? Mm-hmm. But if it wasn't for that fact, I would say leave them be. And I'm not a spiritual person. Mm-hmm. But to then take these individuals out of the ground or out of the cremation urns and then put them in a cardboard box in a storage cupboard just seems...
I would say, look at them, learn from them, put them back.
I mean, a lot of cases they are. The rescue excavations, they're given a different location that is still, like, matched to the same one that they would be. It's still, like, hallowed ground, or... normally the religion is matched as much as they can.
Yeah.
Like, for instance, I think the Paris...
The catacombs,
yes. So all of the remains that needed to be moved were moved to other church grounds.
Have you been in there?
I did. It was the most amazing place I've ever been. Ever.
I have not been to Paris, but I would really... I'm going to go one day.
If you don't bother to see the Louvre or the Eiffel Tower, go to the catacombs, because you won't... It blew my mind.
Yeah.
It was absolutely the most fantastic place I've ever been.
Remarkable. I absolutely want to go. I'm definitely looking forward to it.
It would be worth the however many hour, 10-hour flight it would be to go.
Okay, so give me a couple more examples of interesting sort of deviations that you've seen.
Okay, so what I did find very strange was that in some of the burials, you've got a very long grave that is well longer than the actual bones you've got. But for some reason, some individuals have been squashed. So they've been pulled up and their necks have been put at a very strange angle. And the skull is, like, resting on the sternum.
It's squashed upwards towards their head?
Towards the end of the grave, yeah.
Right. Is it usually up towards the head?
Yes.
Yeah.
So I don't know whether they've been designed so that it looks like they're sitting up.
Huh.
Or whether they've been just pulled up and there's some kind of item placed at the feet that is decomposed we haven't got any traces of. But there were several cases in the database where it was occurring even though there was enough space in the grave to lie them completely out flat. And to me, that struck as so strange. Like, why you would do that? Unless the bottom of the grave was full of something. Like, why are you sitting
up
like that?
Yeah, some kind of object that would have taken up that space, but not something that left enough remains to see evidence of it.
No, because it obviously must have been very important as a deposition in the grave for you to squash up the human remains, which is the main purpose of the grave.
Yeah.
Because even if you were to sit them up, it would almost be like you kind of hunched over, sitting against the wall, not quite. Your pelvis would be, like, slat down, you'd be slouched.
Hmm.
Very strange positioning.
Or maybe if they were holding something in their arms or on their laps, that would have decomposed.
Possibly, and their head was resting against it.
Maybe.
It's just so... The grave plans are so strange.
Because
there's another one that's similar to that. He's in a very strange position. And he's got, like... He's got one knee... He's flexed at the knee. And then one leg straight. And then he's got... His arms are kind of, like, hugging himself. And there's a massive flintstone on his chest. And then on top of this flintstone is a buckle. And I just look at this grave plan and I think, what the hell happened here?
A buckle?
A buckle. Like, what is going on?
What if maybe... I'm coming up with my own reasons for what might have happened. So, like, if they put him down there and for whatever reason the stone is there and then people are, like, his family, like, we throw, like, some dirt or a rose into the grave... Somebody's like, have my lucky buckle. And they just throw it down there.
That's the only thing that could have happened. I can't understand it. Because there's a few that just, no logic. I mean, a lot of logic doesn't occur because it's burial. There isn't much logic.
You think, like you said, they are people like we are people.
Exactly.
And people have their weird tastes and the things they're into or their little inside jokes or whatever.
Exactly.
They have their specific unique lives and they may have been like, you know what, that was my favorite book. Let's put that weird thing in there.
Yeah, exactly.
Why not?
I don't see why that isn't reasonable.
Yeah.
Like, but you find it very strange for people to say that. That doesn't happen a lot. But there's also one that was very peculiar. Flexed at the knees, lying on the side, arms together. And in their hands out in front of them, there's a bowl. And it almost looks like they've been placed to look like they're drinking out of the bowl.
For the listener, she's acting it out for me.
I can't help but... Like, it's so strange. And then it's literally placed to where the mouth would be. And inside the bowl, there's remnants of what we think would be an animal stew. So there's... I think there's sheep vertebrae in there.
Huh.
So it's like... It's what you would make... Exactly what you would make as an offering. But then normally your offering is placed in the grave. as almost a passage to the afterlife. That is renown.
Yeah.
But then this individual's having the stew themselves. So was that its favourite meal?
Or some kind of cultural ritual about, like, abundance to whatever that local deity may have been?
Very possible.
Yeah.
I mean, that when you see it, like, normally you take in
this
the list
makes
of
me
favorites.
Want to get buried in a really weird way.
That's exactly what I thought. Yeah. I was like, because I know nowadays people are making, I think there's one dude from Texas, and he was like, I think he had a burial on his property that he found that was particularly strange. And he was like, well, you know, this was interesting. So what I want is to be buried standing on my head with an old telephone. And I want to be at least 8 feet down.
Mm-hmm.
And that's in his will.
Yep.
I was like, well, thanks so much. Because the people like me later on are going to find this dude and just be like, oh, for God's sake, another
one. He must
one.
Have been really special. Or you look at these people now and go like, well, you're a weirdo.
Exactly.
Or something.
Exactly. Because that's where I came to this, like, eccentric version of the dead. Because yeah. I just think that sometimes that is the answer.
Yeah.
Sometimes these people just are, or just want to be themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got just as right to be yourselves in life as you have in death.
Absolutely. So, of course, we do have to talk about the darker sort of stuff. Because, like we say, sometimes it's just people and their eccentricities.
Sometimes
but there are people who are, you know, thought to be bad or evil or criminal. So what are some examples of things you would see in a case where you'd think, like, ah, that's somebody who did something terrible? I mean, decapitation.
Yes. There's one individual that was buried without his skull. And it was found 2 meters south of the body.
Hmm.
In a different hole.
With a different person or just a separate hole?
Just a separate hole with the head. And you think, yes, he probably angered some people at some point. Because that is very unusual.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we have decapitations, but they normally, for the later Anglo-Saxon period, you have execution cemeteries purposely for that reason.
And how are those people generally buried? I guess there's not generally,
they're
but
normally
examples
prone,
of.
They're normally restrained.
Mm-hmm.
They're normally in shallow graves. It's normally not taken much time, and they're normally rolled in, some of them.
Mm.
So you see this, like, it's almost like this cadaver roll that you get where the limbs fall in a certain way.
Do you get multiple bodies in one grave?
Yes.
Yeah.
You get. There's a lot in my database. A lot. And most of the time, they normally interpret it as whether they died in the same incident or they are. If it's a lot of adults, then possibly it's to do with punishment for one particular thing, and they're all kind of thrown in like a mass grave mentality.
I know it's quite common for criminals to be executed all at one time. Say it's a mass, you know, hanging or beheading or whatever. So
yep.
It makes sense that they would do like a batch of 10 of them and.
Yeah.
Bury them together sort of thing.
It saves time and efficiency is normally what it's about.
And if you want a spectacle, you know, like people can all come and watch all 10 people beheaded or however it happens.
Definitely.
So you mentioned the database. I know you talk about this quite a bit in your thesis.
Yes.
And this is you, I don't know, I wasn't clear if you were talking about like you specifically or if it was you reviewed what, like over 1,000 burial cases.
It was 1,000, yeah. 1,016 individuals.
So this is a database that you personally compiled?
It is.
Because you said that this is the first time that that sort of amount of evidence about that burial...
From those sites
had been compared.
Yes.
To see... And this is including all the quote-unquote normal burials and the ones that are atypical.
Yes. And then of the... I came up with categories that I would define as atypical. Prone was obviously the most obvious.
Mm-hmm.
So
this means like laying horizontal?
Face down.
Face prone. Down, okay.
Yep. And then multiple burial.
Mm-hmm.
Buried with mystic items like the amulets, for instance. Buried in an unusual location. So I've got 3 individuals that were buried. I think they're buried about 30 feet away from the rest, which is very strange. Almost like outside of the boundaries, up to the boundaries of the cemetery. And they are dated to be the same as the rest of the individuals, but for some reason they're buried
So that's an assumption that I made. And I was thinking more about Christian burials. But if somebody was, for whatever reason, not welcome, that they would have, say, put them outside of the grounds of the church or whatever they consider to be their special burial area, and we'll put them over there.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And that's what you get.
But not too far.
Exactly, yeah. But these were still in the cemetery bounds. So you kind of think, well, maybe they were bad, but they just weren't that bad. So they're still in, because you could have buried them completely elsewhere. We wouldn't have had them within that cemetery.
That's our shitty uncle. He's still a part of the family, but he owed us a lot of money, so...
Exactly, yeah.
We're just going to keep an eye on you from a distance.
He was all right, but, you know, he was a bit of a dodgy.
Yeah. Yeah, this is kind of a random side thing that I saw when I was doing a little bit of last-minute research, just about the whole, like, sort of field of studying burial and deviant burial, which I guess is a lot more popular in the last 30 years or so. The anti-vampire burials in Eastern Europe and Poland.
Poland, there are some very, I would say, almost, like, staggering burials, because you look at those compared to mine, even, and some of mine are pretty strange, but you look at those and there's stone stakes straight through the mouth, through the back of the skull. Like, they really were scared of some of these people. That's my only instinct, was that they're very worried.
So was it
come back.
That they buried them in a fairly normal way initially, or they died in a normal way, but they were so scared they were going to come back to life?
Yes.
And that's what I read a little bit. And that sometimes they would, for whatever reason, dig them up, maybe just to check on them.
Yes.
And
check they're still there.
And if they, of course, if they were sort of bloated and decomposing, they go, okay, well, that's fine. But if they look too similar, like they haven't decomposed enough, they think that's a vampire. And I don't know, cut the head off, do whatever they were doing.
Yep.
But, of course, like, certain temperatures, certain types of ground would sometimes preserve them a little bit, so they wouldn't look that different.
Yes.
So they'd freak out and think, this person's going to become a vampire.
Yeah.
And specifically rise from the dead and kill the rest of their family.
Exactly.
Yeah, so this was apparently a major fear, and I don't even think it's that old. I think it's more like late 19th, early 20th century.
Yeah, well, it's still, it's so popular today.
Mm.
Like, that vampire legacy just continues to live on. And I think some of them, you look at them and you think, because some of them do have the stakes traditionally through the heart, and that's where
they buried them the first time, just to make sure they weren't going to get up,
make sure they are not moving. And then that's where you also get similar graves where they're buried face down, and then they pile the stones on. And then that's also where you get the decapitation from.
So, do you think that superstition or religious belief stops them from just burning the bodies outright?
I think it completely depends on what their usual burial rite is.
Mm-hmm.
It takes a long time to burn a body fully.
Yeah.
And then you also have a lot more pieces.
And also, if they're not a vampire, and if they're still your father,
yes,
and they're going to be okay, you want them to go to heaven.
Yes.
Or,
but that's not going to happen. But,
so
instances.
Don't burn their body.
Yeah. But they're still going to put a massive stake through their heart. So it's kind of like,
because if you believe the Bible, you're going to come back in the same form that your body is buried in.
Yeah.
I guess. Depending on what you believe.
Dependent on your belief. Because a lot of it is very, like you said at the beginning, it's communities. One person did one thing, and then that means, well, they did this, and then we must do this because they did it. And then I'd love to see the track of how it originated in burial rite to where we have today, and you have this massive kind of manipulation of where spiritual and ritual and practical motifs come into play.
Isn't that just called culture?
Supposedly. But so, like, some of them must be so deliberate.
Mm-hmm.
And you have made from one instance that has affected the right of much later generations.
Yeah, I mean, it's also incredibly fascinating. So you're waiting on your waiting to hear the final word.
I am. I'm
for your PhD
I'm
now.
I'm gonna finish off some edits and then send it off. Fingers crossed, it should all be fine, and the PhD should be done.
And you guys have to move back to the UK in a couple weeks.
We do, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately.
Yeah.
You know, what's next for you?
What's next? I have no idea.
Are you hoping to get involved in more research in the UK?
I'd like to do other people's research, I think. Mm-hmm. I think it takes a toll to do death so often for so long.
Fair enough.
And you need a bit of a breather. Because for instance, like I talked about that little boy, like for me, he wasn't just, you know, a little bit of research.
Mm-hmm.
These were these individuals that I got to know very closely for a long time. And it kind of gives you a different perspective on life.
I get emotional during lectures.
Yeah.
On other cultures, on other families, on, you know, things you learn about, especially when you see people suffering.
Yes.
But yeah, even just in a lecture, in an anthropology class or in a history class. And, you know, I'm an emotional person.
Mm.
But,
and it's difficult to avoid it because a lot of the cemetery reports that I read and a lot of my research is, you know, pure biological fact. But in the same instance, that gives you a very clear instance of a person. But then I also have, for instance, there's one case where I've got a youngish female who is thrown on top of the burial of a very wealthy female. Hmm. And they assume her to be a slave or a servant girl for this lady. And I just think, but I almost know the details of this person, like I can imagine her.
Mm-hmm.
And then you read these things and you think, that's horrendous.
Mm-hmm.
And that does take its toll.
That's humans.
Yeah. Yeah, that is true. Maybe I should just, like, live in a cave on my own, away from the world.
Sometimes I have moments in life where I'm like, I'll just harden myself and I'll be fine. But, like, I just can't.
No. Mm-hmm. No, you can't anymore.
So, of course, I mean, I'm sure people have asked you this, and I have to close out the podcast with this. How do you want to be buried?
I want to be buried the most efficient way possible. Mm-hmm. And I want to be none of this messing around. I just want to be straight from the hospital, cremated, or wherever I end up cremated. And I want to go into a nice cardboard urn. And I want to be placed into the ground where I can be very, very useful and fertilize the soil. That is the only way that I want to go.
Yeah, I can relate to that. I have this partner, I have this conversation with my partner a lot because, like I said, we live right next to the cemetery and we go for a lot of walks in the cemetery. So naturally it brings up the conversation.
Yeah.
And I have kind of two different directions that I could go with it.
Right.
One would be the very, like, simplistic, just put me right in the ground and the most simple, like, actually my body, I think. Or you know what? I don't really have a problem with any of the ways of going because I'm dead and I don't care.
Exactly.
So, like, cremation, that's fine. Like, also, like, just put my body straight in the ground in a pine box, let the worms and everything eat me.
Paint me.
That seems very nice to me.
Yeah.
Just letting, like, my body go back into the soil.
Yeah.
Very simple, you know, like, natural clothing, no crazy paint or varnish or...
No, none of that.
Whatever, just put me right in the ground. Or, I also think that having like an open casket, giant funeral, making all these people look at my body in a really, like, dramatic, like, over-the-top way would also be, like...
I'm surprised you didn't say, like, and they all must, like, embalm me, and then each one of them must have a photo with me, and they all have to wear Victorian garb.
Oh, yeah, we'll do, like, a full morning, like, sit me up on the couch in the house, and, yeah, like, there is a part of me that's like, let's make it really dramatic and really morbid and really over the top. But I think I would only do that if I had become, like, an eccentric rich person.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to be a burden on anyone.
That's true.
So if people don't have the money to pay for any of that,
then
just throw me in the ground.
But part of me, I feel that as well. Like, part of me really wants to screw up future archaeologists and really throw...
Put me in the ground in a really weird pose.
Yeah. Put me in, like, star-shaped.
Yeah, well, like a magic eight ball.
Yep.
And I don't know what else. Yeah.
Just, like, random things, like a rocking horse.
Yeah.
And, you know, a banana. And just really screw me up. Put me upside down in a star. And let's wait and see what their analysis is.
Yeah,
because that has nothing to do with the person that I am.
Yeah, absolutely. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming to talk to me.
It was great.
I enjoyed it very much. And I know you're moving back to England soon, but, you know, who knows? Maybe one day I will be there or you'll be here.
You definitely should.
And, you know, we'll get to do this again.
Yeah, we should go. We should meet in Paris under the catacombs.
Oh, yeah, that's a great idea. Okay, let's cheers to that.
Cheers.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, that wraps up our episode on Deviant Burial. Honestly, I could listen to that girl talk about cemeteries all day. As always, we'd love to hear from you if you have any feedback or suggestions for topics. You can reach us at thetipsyarchives@gmail.com or on Twitter @tipsyarchives. Thanks for listening.